Good morning, friends. I want to begin my message this morning by letting you into a secret. I am not a big fan of clowns. As a child, I had a real fear of them. I don't know where the fear came from, but I can clearly remember one occasion as a child going to the circus, and I enjoyed it very much until the clowns came out and started messing around, spraying water at people, etc. I think part of my fear was being humiliated by them, by being made to look stupid or being belittled. As I've told you before, I was a very quiet child and still am a quiet person, so being singled out for anything, especially being made a fool of, put the fear of God in me. When it comes to the natural world, I have a fear of snakes, but I think that's fairly common. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think fear of snakes is hardwired into us as human beings. We have a flight instinct when it comes to them. As you may have guessed by now, I've spent some time during the last week thinking about the issue of fear. The Bible tells us that perfect love drives out all fear. Today, we're going to look at what that might mean. I want to begin by talking about the kind of fear that is driven out by perfect love, because not all fear is bad. If you think about our world for a minute, it isn't difficult to find examples where this is so. The fear of darkness may have given rise to electricity. The fear of pain to great advances in medicine. The fear of ignorance to institutions of learning. And the fear of war to something like the United Nations. In other words, this kind of fear enables us to grow, enables us to learn. It isn't a fear that plagues us. The kind of fear that does plague us, however, is what we might call abnormal fear. And it's this kind of fear that is emotionally ruinous and psychologically damaging. It's the difference between being fearful of snakes when walking through the African bush and being fearful of the snakes living under one's lounge carpet or one's bed. I read that human beings are born with only two fears, maybe three, if snakes are to be taken into account, and that is the fear of falling and a fear of loud noises. All other fears, it's believed, are environmentally acquired. Where so-called normal fears, as we have noted, might protect us, these fears tend to paralyze us, often poisoning and distorting our inner lives, making life a misery to be endured rather than a joy to be reveled in. When one spends time pondering the world and pondering the issue of fear, one quickly realizes the key role that fear has played not only in the lives of individuals, but also that of nations. People may believe, for example, that war is caused by hatred, that a people's hatred of each other leads to war. But what causes war hatred in the first place? And the answer, mostly, is fear. For example, it's been discovered in surveys conducted among men in war-torn areas of our world going off to fight that the biggest motivator for them doing so was the fear of humiliation. For those in power, it might be the fear of losing that power that causes them to fight. Back in the First World, we witness great fear when it comes to things like aging and death. Things we simply cannot avoid, but despite this, an awful lot of staving off is entered into, with many of our celebrities and stars plumped and stretched beyond the limits of what we might call normal. And there are other fears too, especially in the world right now, real fears that seem to be out of our control, like the fear for many of unemployment. How then do we deal with fear, especially the type of fear that drags us down and makes life hell for so many? This morning we are going to consider four things, and the first one is this. One of the elements in dealing with fear is by looking at it squarely and honestly, confronting it if you like. A number of years ago now, when the world of flying was very different, Leandra and I were on a flight from Johannesburg to Cape Town. And for those of you who have never been to Cape Town, the views from the plane when coming into land can be quite spectacular. So Leandra called a flight attendant and asked her whether it would be possible for us to join the pilots in the cockpit when the plane was about to land. The flight attendant went off to find out whether it would be possible and came back with an affirmative yes. Unfortunately for me, there wasn't a second space in the cockpit because it was apparently occupied by a person on the flight who was absolutely petrified of flying. I have to confess, I was slightly cheesed off because if you know me, you'll know I love aircraft. But I came to terms with the fact that the person's need was obviously greater than mine, and Leandra got to see Cape Town in all its glory from the cockpit of the plane. The person concerned had been given an opportunity to confront her fear of flying, and she had grabbed the bull by the horns and done exactly that. I think of Moses in the pages of the Hebrew Scriptures. We know Moses as a great leader, the one who led his people out of Egypt, parted the seas with God's help, and led his people to the promised land. But what we often forget is the fact that Moses was what we might call a reluctant leader. When God called Moses and told him that he had heard the cries of his people in Egypt and he wanted Moses to be their leader, Moses was anything but ready. First, he told God that he was a nobody, that no one, especially not a king, would listen to him. And then he told God that the Israelites wouldn't listen to him. And finally, he told God that he wasn't very good with words. And with great patience, God assured Moses that he would always be with him. Moses reluctantly, perhaps, faced his fear, but he faced it nonetheless. When I first believed I was being called into the ministry, I think I knew something of the fear that Moses experienced. After all, who was I to say anything to anyone? And to top it all, I was exceedingly shy. Yet I faced my fear. So what you witness on a Sunday is me taking a step in faith more than anything else, believing like Moses that God is with me every step of the way. And this leads me to our second point about overcoming fear. It takes courage, described by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as an inner resolution to go forward in spite of obstacles and frightening situations. When we consider the Bible, even for a moment, many of the characters we find within its pages show tremendous courage in doing what they did, Moses being one of them. I think about Paul, for example, and all the issues he faced in his life, all the challenges and the hardships and the trials and the testing. And some might say, well, Paul is far too zealous. And he might well have been. But he showed tremendous courage in living out what he believed God had called him to do. Of course, friends, I think of Jesus too and the courage we witness in him. We may say, but he was Jesus, he was special. But if our theological understanding is any good, he was human too. And because he was human, he could experience everything we might experience, including fear. Yet what we witness in him, amongst other things, is courage. In facing up to those who opposed him, in exposing their hypocrisy, in going against the grain in so many ways, in standing up for the oppressed, in facing the specter of the cross, courage marked the life and indeed the death of Jesus, who taught those who followed him that they had nothing to fear, especially from man or from humankind. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, Jesus told those who followed him. And these words have meant a great deal to me as I've spent time thinking about the world we live in. They've given me great courage. But friends, there's more than facing our fears and having courage. For another part of combating fear, a hugely important part, is that of love. If there is any power that can deal with fear and drive it out, it is that of love. And according to the author of 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7, God has not given us a spirit of fear or cowardice, but a spirit of power, of love, and self-discipline. When one considers the nations of the world, one soon sees that the nations, it seems, believe that greater armaments would cast out fear, as was once witnessed when the Roman Empire existed, or we saw during the Cold War. But that understanding of more armaments, more weapons, more power has only produced more fear and more paranoia. And that is because arms, weapons cannot cast out fear, only love can. Of course, I'm not talking about romantic love, which some people fear, but agape love, the kind of love that we have witnessed in Jesus. It was this love that enabled Jesus to reach out to those who, through ignorance and prejudice, were feared by their communities. It was this love that enabled Jesus to touch them on the outside, yes, but on the inside too. Jesus, in and through love, brought wholeness and healing and enabled those who had been made well not to fear again. In other words, his love made them complete, the meaning of perfect, as in perfect love. One of my favorite stories in the Gospels is the story of the woman who had an issue of blood, found in various Gospels, including Luke chapter 8 and from verse 43. The woman, we are told, had suffered hemorrhages for 12 years. She had spent all her money on seeking to find a cure, but nothing, it seems, could be done for her. But on a day when Jesus was present, the woman decided that perhaps this Jesus could help her. It seems as if she had nothing to lose. Not knowing Jesus, the woman approached him with great fear and trembling. But she didn't ask to speak to him. She didn't cry out like the blind men that Jesus had healed. Instead, perhaps because she was afraid, she simply touched the hem of his garment, believing that because he was wearing it, she might be healed. But Jesus, in the midst of a bustling crowd, had noticed. And so he asked his disciples who had touched him. Peter, who was close to Jesus, looked at him as if he had lost the plot and commented about the crowds. But Jesus knew, we are told, because power had left him. And the woman, realizing that she couldn't hide and in the midst of all the people, fell down before Jesus and told him why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And Jesus spoke to her, saying, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." I love this story, obviously, because the woman was made well. But I love it even more because of the way or manner of Jesus, who exuded such great love that the woman only had to touch the hem of his garment in order to be healed and made whole again. His use of the word daughter, restoring her to her rightful place. Fear is negated by love. And although the road to negating it might often be long and hard, love always triumphs in the end. And finally, friends, to add to love, we have faith, putting our trust, like the woman, in God through Christ. Dr. King, in a sermon about God being able, wrote these words about his own life. He wrote, "The first 20 years of my life were packed with fulfillment. I had no basic problems or burdens. Because of concerned and loving parents who provided for my every need, I sailed through high school, through college, through theological school, and graduate school without interruption. It was not until I became part of the leadership of the Montgomery bus protest that I was actually confronted with the trials of life. Almost immediately after the protest had been undertaken, we began to receive threatening phone calls and letters in our home. Sporadic in the beginning, they increased day after day. At first, I took them in my stride, feeling that they were the work of a few hotheads who would be discouraged that we would not fight back. But as the weeks passed, I realized that many of the threats were more in earnest. I felt myself faltering and growing in fear. After a particularly strenuous day, I settled in my bed at a late hour. My wife had already fallen asleep. And I was about to doze off when the telephone rang. An angry voice said, "Listen here." And then Dr. King used the N-word. "We've taken all we want from you. Before next week, you'll be sorry you ever came to Montgomery." "I hung up," wrote Dr. King, "but I couldn't sleep. It seems like all my fears had come down on me at once. I had reached the saturation point. I got out of my bed and began to walk the floor. Finally, I went to the kitchen and heated a pot of coffee. I was ready to give up. I tried to think of a way to move out of the picture without appearing to be a coward. In this state of exhaustion, when my courage had almost gone, I determined to take my problem to God. My head in my hands, I bowed over the kitchen table and prayed aloud. The words I spoke to God that night are still vivid in my memory. I am here to take a stand for what I believe is right, but now I am afraid. The people are looking to me for leadership, and if I stand before them without strength and courage, they too will falter. I am at the end of my powers. I have nothing left. I've come to the point where I cannot face it alone." At that moment, I experienced the divine presence as I had never experienced before. It seemed as though I could hear the quiet assurance of an inner voice saying, "Stand up for righteousness, stand up for truth. God will be at your side forever." Almost at once, my fears began to pass from me. My uncertainty disappeared. I was ready to face anything. The outer situation remained exactly the same, but God had given me an inner calm. 3 nights later, our house was bombed. Strangely enough, I accepted the word of the bombing calmly. My experience with God had given me a new strength and trust. I now know that God is able to give us the interior resources to face the storms and the problems of life. Finally, this morning, friends, Dr. King recalled that one of the most dedicated participants in the Montgomery bus protest was an elderly woman known affectionately as Mother Pollard. Although she was poverty-stricken and uneducated, Dr. King wrote, she possessed an intelligence and had a wisdom about her which told him she understood very deeply what the movement meant and also what was at stake. On one particular Monday, after a packed and tension-filled meeting, where Dr. King had done his best to convey an impression of strength and courage, Mother Pollard approached him and, after saying, "Come here, son," and giving him an affectionate hug, she asked him what was wrong. When Dr. King protested and told her everything was fine, she said, "You can't fool me." And then she assured him that everyone was behind him. "But even if we aren't all behind you," she added, "God's gonna take care of you." As she spoke these consoling words, Dr. King wrote, "Everything in me quivered and quickened with the pulsing tremor of raw energy." Since that dreary night in 1956, he continued, "Mother Pollard has passed into glory, and I have known few quiet days. I have been tortured without and tormented within by raging fires of tribulation. I have been forced to muster what strength and courage I have to withstand howling winds of pain and jostling storms of adversity. But as the years have unfolded, the eloquently simple words of Mother Pollard have come back again and again to give light and peace and guidance to my troubled soul. God's going to take care of you." This faith transforms the whirlwind of despair into a warm and reviving breeze of hope. Fear knocked at the door. Faith answered. There was no one there. Shall we pray together? Almighty and loving God, Much of our world is blighted with fear. So many decisions, so many lives are driven by it. Help us, Lord, not to fear. Instead, help us to face our fears with courage, with love, and with faith. Thank you for the example of those around us, those that we can learn from, and thank you for the example of Jesus, who taught us and his disciples that we have nothing to fear. In these difficult times especially, may we put our trust in you. And would you be with those who are fearful for whatever reason, whatever the cause of their fear might be. For we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Still, for the power of the Lord is moved.